On this episode of ITAV, the future of cloud computing, both on campuses and abroad, what it means to bring your own device and your own meeting to the work, and where IT and AV can help businesses come out of COVID-19. All that and more. Next on ITAV.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation. Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is ITAV, episode 43, recorded Thursday, June 25th, 2020. Have a plan.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by
Extron, industry-leading technology backed by world-class support.
This is ITAV, the monthly look at the IT and AV sector and how they both come together. My name is Tim Albright. I am your host. With us to discuss the IT and the AV industry, my first guest is Mr. Derek Jonkus from Extron Electronics. Welcome, sir.
Hey there, Tim. How's it going?
Good, good. Also with us is our buddy, Mr. Sean Reed, independent, fantastic programmer, designer, and also one of our writers here at AV Nation. You can check out some of his work. He actually just posted a piece this past week. So welcome, sir.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Also, you can check out his website, and we'll talk about it again, but really cool artwork on Astro Man. So check that out. First story actually comes to us from our own website. The first annual Presence Summit is aimed at helping video communicators, and this is being put on by PTZ Optics in conjunction with Starin Marketing. Full disclosure, I'm actually speaking at this in a couple of weeks. So you can check that out. It's on July 15th. We'll put a link on this episode's page. You can go there. But really want to kind of find out here is, and Derek, we'll start with you on this. More and more video, and this goes without saying, right? Not only remotely as we're all working from home, but one of the underlying threads that are kind of weaved through all of these stories here recently in the last 3 months is the hybrid workplace, right? Where you've got folks who are working from home, who are working in the office, who are maybe working in a Starbucks somewhere, but this video all kind of gets pulled together, and eventually in the hybrid area, it's going to be pulled into the workplace and onto the corporate network. What are the IT and the technology managers here facing in the next like 6 months to a year as this hybrid system kind of evolves? What are some of the challenges they're going to be faced with?
I don't know. I think the first thing, the whole reason for this summit, from what I understand, is there's just a new appetite for video.
Yeah.
You know, video has just become more ubiquitous. It's kind of been transformative. It's nothing anyone could have strategically planned for, but something that everyone was forced to do in order to be able to, you know, have some business continuity or educational continuity. So I think folks are going to move away from, hey, we need to get a tactic to make sure we can support video communications in our enterprise or on our campus or for our students or our staff, to actually going back and saying, okay, now that I've caught my breath, can we actually go ahead and put together a strategy that allows us to kind of embrace this for the long term, not just in survival mode, but for something that is sustainable. You know, and I think people could make some different choices with a little more education. And it sounds like what this Presence Summit is really all about.
Yeah. And it really, really quickly, you mentioned the fact that we have to move beyond survival mode. Sean, a week before this actually is a partner webinar. This is for the integrators, the dealers. What can they do to help their clients as they all kind of work through this new reality of video first almost?
I've had probably a half dozen conversations in the last 2 days on this very subject, and I keep saying the same thing. Everyone keeps talking about how we're going to transition to this new normal, but I said there's going to be another new normal after this one and another one after this one. And I will say this again, anyone who has spoken to me in the last 2 days or week has heard me say this. If you don't have a 1-year plan, 3-year plan, 5-year plan, 10-year plan for your company's technology rollout, you're not thinking appropriately. You need to have a plan to get through the rest of this year, which is going to be distancing. You're going to need a 3-year plan, which is going to either be we're still distancing or we're back in the office. And did we spend our money wisely that first year on changing everything, but not having things for when things go back to normal or get worse? A 5-year plan for how we're going to get our ROI on the things we spent money on this year and 3 years. And then a 10-year plan on are we still going to be here and what are we doing now? Have we completely moved away from even having an office? That's not going to work for, say, manufacturing or healthcare, but for education, for technology companies, startups, co-working spaces. A lot of things are going to start to change and shift away from physical workspaces. So that 1, 3, 5, 10 is what I'm pitching to a lot of my consultancy clients, saying, hey, this is how we, instead of thinking 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 1 year, you need to be thinking much farther out because okay, so things are going to change.
let me ask you this, because I understand what you're saying. And probably 10 years ago, I was on board with you. When I was a technology manager, I was 100% on that team.
Right.
The more that I read and the more that this industry evolves, and not just this industry, the IT industry, the technology industry, mm-hmm. and maybe it's just I'm getting older and I'm okay with that. But good God, 10 years is a long time. I mean, the iPhone is 11, 12 years old.
Yeah.
Okay. So could you have imagined where we would have been 10 years ago with enough confidence and enough clarity to forecast 10 years from now?
Well, it's different. It's not about saying what the technology would be. It's saying, I am sure my company will be here in 10 years. I don't know what it's going to be. I need to put in a lockbox X number of dollars to either hire the right people, buy the right things, build the right facility that my business is ready a decade from now. It's not about trying to read the tea leaves and say, I'm Pharaoh and I'm going to see into the future. It's about saying, making sure that I am being Joseph, to ride the biblical.
Very nice. Yeah, yeah.
That I'm looking far enough down the line, like, hey, let's put all the grain over here for when the famine comes and that we're carrying what we need so that everyone's not starving. Because I can name, without naming names, four of my big clients who have been in business longer than Astroman, which I've been out over a year, they are no longer in existence.
Yeah.
In 3 months. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. We can look at someone, I'm going to name drop somebody only because they need a job. Ben Shimwell from TCOM, who was there 11 and a half years. Yep. Everyone knows him. They let him go. Ben is one of the best people in this industry. There's no one who'll tell you otherwise. He's a mentor. He's a teacher. He's a genius engineer. He's also one of the sweetest, nicest men you'll ever meet. If they can let someone like him go, there is nothing for sure. And that's what I'm saying. 1, 3, 5, 10. That's a business. That's your programmers, your techs. If you're a tech at AVI Scale, Diversified, or even Bob's AV Garage, and your plan is to stay being a tech for the next 3 years, chances are you will not have a job. If you don't have a plan to transition to do something else, personally, professionally, as within that company or somewhere else, you're not thinking correctly. This industry is going to be around. It's going to metastasize and evolve at the same time, and you need to have a plan to move forward with it. I know people have been techs for 12 years, and they're happy being techs. Techs are going to go away as we transition to AV as a service and soft codecs. There will be no need to install anything. I have clients ask me how much will it take to get 1,000 huddle cams shipped out to all my workers and just do a firmware update and get them all on whatever platform they're choosing to use. They're not looking at installing huddle rooms and conference rooms. They're thinking for the next year, everyone's at home. So let me just get them all a small camera and be done with it. That's where we have to change how we're thinking. The clients are thinking differently. And if our clients are not, as I've heard many people talk about, they are sitting in these meetings and people are like, well, why don't we just get a new Polycom system? And even the AV contractor told them, like, you don't need a Polycom system. You do not need to drop 6-7 figures on hardware that no one's going to use because no one's in your office. So this is what I'm talking about, that 1, 3, 5, and then 10 going way down the line. Right.
All right. Derek, one of the things that Extron does really well is education. You guys make really good products, but one thing that you are known for is the education in the industry. How does a manufacturer like Extron do what Sean's saying and help these techs and help everybody evolve themselves and take a look at that, if he's right, this 5 and 10 year plan where, yes, we are all still going to be here. Yes, there will still be an AV industry. It will evolve, though. It will not look the same because it doesn't look the same as it did 10 years ago. So beyond education, how do you take folks along when sometimes they didn't even like the digital transition from 10 years ago?
I know. You have them put away all those BNC extractor tools we all have hanging around in a drawer somewhere in our old toolbox that we used to.
I still have a crimper, just for the record.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, at least tweakers are still valid. So that's
tweakers good. Are still valid.
They use those on all kinds of things. But the BNC extraction tool, I think there's a, I think just like Sean is mentioning, you know, there's sort of an informational and a, don't know, a transition that's occurring here, but this wasn't the one you could necessarily plan for, but it was the one that was sort of foisted on everybody equally. You know, it was one of those things where it just began to happen and everyone had to adopt some way of being able to kind of move forward. I think there's sort of a fit, maybe a match between what Sean, what you were saying, for example, and maybe what our culture at Extron is, which is we tend to take the long view on a lot of things. And that's something that's culturally kind of a premise that our owner, Andrew Edwards, really has instilled in a lot of us, in particular when it comes to thinking about education. And, you know, we want to make sure that folks are aware of the technologies that are out there. You know, if we don't have the product, you know, we don't have the product. But our intention is to try to, when we do have the product, try to make the best product that it can be. And going back to your direct question, helping individuals in the industry, I think, is what's it's our duty to do that in our industry. I mean, there's, you know, whether you're competitors or colleagues or whatnot, there's a lot of things to learn. You know, and so when you started out in AV, you probably started, you know, one way or another because someone got you into it, you had a passion for it. So you think about all the skills you need to have, right? You need a little bit about construction, electrical, project management. Oh, there's the AV thing too. And now all of a sudden you need to be an IT expert. Yep. Oh, you need to understand all the as a service things you could ever imagine. And so those are all different transitions, but the best way we can help is through that education, teaching people about technology, teaching about what they can look for, and realizing that I believe maybe more than ever, our industry is going to have a number of different solutions. You know, it's like a big layer cake. It's not going to be like a pie. A pie was like, oh, well, you just divide it up. But I think you know, it's kind of like a pie with layers or something. I don't know.
I like that analogy. Yeah. Now I'm hungry, but thanks.
Now I'm hungry. Sean, are you hungry? I'm hungry.
I ate breakfast. I'm on my first cup of coffee. Too, but when I move on to the second, we can talk.
So as we wrap up here really quickly, the last thing I will say about this summit, the college radio DJ in me is also really excited about one thing. When I was in college radio in the 90s, there was an artist by the name of G Love and the Special Sauce.
Oh,
that we played the crud out of. Garrett Dutton, who is G Love of G Love and the Special Sauce, actually is going to play an interactive performance during this present summit.
I saw that.
And I'm going to be 20-year-old kid again. So just for the record, that's going to be cool too. So, all right. The next story here comes to us from our friends over at Commercial Integrator. Actually, it's an extension of this one. Talking about UCC design for remote work, and they interview our good friend, Mr. Julian Phillips, who is now with ABISPL, now that the Whitlock ABISPL thing happened. Julian's talking about how we are built for this. The AV industry is built for this. AV integrators help customers share content and ensure voices, quote unquote, and identities are shared in real time. Mm-hmm. Sean is... You know, you're talking about, you know, making sure you plan for 5 and 10 years. Let's talk about the next year, though. As folks get back to work and get back to the offices, what is the role of the AV integrator to help them evolve their systems and go from maybe ginormous corporate, you know, boardrooms to either hoteled huddle spaces or these individual units where they can collaborate remotely with everybody?
Oh, that's going to be fun. So what I have seen, and I'm going to name drop of a good friend of mine, Kreshmir Tokit, who used to work for Electrosonic, now works for somebody else, a brilliant engineer, and anyone doesn't know him should get to know him. He's a great guy. And he just had a baby, so, you know, props to him. He's working on some new standards for social distancing within confined spaces, which are brilliant, and he's a brilliant guy. I will be putting some of his work, well, bastardizing much of his work for my next article for AV Nation with his permission. but he will get more name
attribution there, Sean. Attribution.
Exactly. Well, he likes to keep his name off things, but he's really tackling how to use it. Say, for example, I'm a big Fortune 500 company with, you know, a campus or two. I've got a few hundred huddle rooms that I've already invested all this money into. I can't just let that space go for naught. I can't lease it for a number of reasons, right? No one else is coming into that office. How do I reuse that space? How do I take a huddle room meant for 3 to 4 people to be in close proximity and still utilize that space and achieve some kind of ROI? So that comes down to really a couple different ways. Do you now reinvent that space where it's only used for one or two people tops, if you can keep a 6 foot difference distance, or do you reimagine it as maybe a presentation space where you have the people, if you're, say, for example, I think New York is at what, 25% capacity in the office. So if I got 25% capacity and 75% are off campus or out of the office, that becomes a single person presentation room where one person leads a meeting from within that space. And how does that space then get transformed into something more utilitarian? That one person now presenting to the majority of the company, a mini all hand space. So there's different approaches. I mean, if I've already just built a new building, which is a big problem, a lot of people were in the middle of building projects when COVID hit, and now those projects are either sitting stale, they're moving forward with no idea what's going to be the end result, or my new favorite that's coming up is I have a $10 million project. My integrator or contractor no longer exists because of COVID. I'm trying to now finish it for a fraction of the price, and I'm trying to basically find someone to finish this project for a fraction of the price, and everyone's going, no, I can't do it. Or some hanging bangs coming in and saying, yeah, I'll do it for 50 grand. And people are getting bids that way. And I've been seeing that happen. I've been hearing complaints from friends and peers. So we have to think about how we use what we have, but that's what clients have to do. Yep. If you've got an office that's sitting empty, if you cannot find a way to sublease it, which is, I think, the best way to use it. If there's, for example, let's say I have an office, I had a whole floor and my company's not using it, but I have a client maybe that doesn't have, that's growing and they need a space. Tell them, hey, you can come use this space. We'll work out some deal. You can take these offices as yours in exchange for this or that. You can reuse that. Now you're, instead of providing AV, you're providing AV as a service because now it's already AV ready or technology ready. There are ways to achieve that ROI, use your space. And then if you say, hey, I was already planning this upgrade or this migration to this technology or service, now you can justify still spending that money because now you're going to get a return by reusing that technology as a product that you're now reselling. That's a great way to do it. Maybe not so much for developers who are already trying to lease spaces and get people in there, but if I already have a space that I've already paid a lease or rent on that I am now stuck in a contract for, I could reuse that space and still justify spending money updating my technology. So that's what I've been trying to push people towards, trying to be think outside the box so that they're not just sitting still, find new ways to bring in money, keep your business going. I'm seeing a lot of people trying to reinvent the wheel. People have been on Zoom for years. Now want to move to another platform or vice versa. We need to move to something else. We've been on WebEx. Let's go to Skype. Let's do this. Everyone's trying to find that next new thing. It's almost like Tinder didn't work. So I'm going to try Bumble with my video teleconferencing. And it's like, it doesn't work that way, guys. You can't, just because you're not meeting anyone on Skype, let's try WebEx to see if I look cuter. It doesn't work that same way.
Just for the record, Sean, that may have been the first time anybody has uttered either Tinder or Bumble on any of our programs. But
I'm trying to speak generationally.
I appreciate that.
I'm trying to make sure that the millennials who watch this program feel like we're not
millennials. My fault. You're talking to Zoomers there, but millennials are already married and they've got kids and mortgages and stuff.
Hey, us Gen Xers already feel left out. We're all divorced and just angry.
Straight. Rage Against the Machine. All right.
And G loves the special sauce.
Amen, brother. Amen. Derek, one of the things that's come out of this, good night. This has already gone off the rails. And Bradford Ben's not even here. The whole idea of BYOD, bring your own device, a number of years ago, huddle spaces, this is where that whole concept, the BYOD, is making a resurgence for one very unexpected reason, at least 6 months ago was an unexpected reason. And that's the safety, health and safety, right? You've got an iPhone, you've got an Android, that can be your control system interface, right? Extron has mobile apps you can do that with. Also, you can bring in your own laptop or your own Surface or whatever and connect wirelessly to a system, right? And that can be your presentation system. Is this something where we're going to see a resurgence and maybe that's the next step for integrators where they take a look at the existing systems and they go, okay, now this is how we keep your system and your clients and your employees safe by going back to this somewhat, old system of BYOD or bring your own systems.
Yeah. It's like a bring your own safer device.
Yeah. Right?
Because it's, it may not be ideal, but it may remove, some hesitation about some aspect of returning to work. And this might be an evolutionary thing where it could be temporary or it could be something that's permanent. So one of the things we've done recently is we've changed some of our apps and added additional accessibility options in them. Another thing that we actually just announced yesterday is that we actually publicized a tool that we've had, but we didn't realize it would be so useful in being able to use QR codes to get to the internal secure web servers. So that customers on any devices, if you don't want to use an app, or if you can't use an app, you could just use your web browser and load the HTML5 user interface in any of the spaces to have extra on equipment. So that's, you know, if you have anything from a button panel on a wall to a touch panel, just scan a QR code on a sticker, on a label, on a printed sheet, or on the touch panel itself, and you can navigate to a version that's just for you and your device.
Yeah.
So we're definitely looking at these kind of some of these solutions that kind of contribute to what might be considered a safer workspace. Some of those solutions definitely revolve around BYOD or different techniques in using BYOD, since it's something you have with you all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I see a big, big jump in that. So.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's just one of those topics where maybe like Sean's, you know, like you're mentioning is, you know, there's are these evolutionary topics where you know, you got to come up with some strategies for people to have options to return to their spaces, because not everyone's needs are the same. And they may not be using the same technology set, but it's really cool, at least from our perspective, that if you've already made, for example, an investment with Extron, you don't need to go around and reinvest and buy a whole lot of new things to be able to extend new features to what you've already invested in.
Well, and that's the other thing is one of the things that manufacturers have the ability to do is upgrade and expand with existing firmware or new firmware, right? Yeah. You guys can take a look at your existing product line, right? And you guys, I'm sure, have a spreadsheet somewhere that says that we've sold, you know, this is how many systems of this type we've sold and that type we've sold, right? And then you could go in from a product development standpoint and go, okay, this is our most popular control platform, right? And then we can increase the abilities of that. Or maybe this is where most of our education folks live. So let's kind of develop something for them during this crisis to help them, you know, not only, you know, upgrade, but also increase the capabilities and the safety of their systems.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're probably unique in that way, since we own much of our own intellectual property, and that makes it a bit easier, you know, when you understand how to navigate your own systems. And hopefully, you know, we continue to be able to make the kind of good technology choices that allow, you know, some of these solutions to be pervasive. So that, for example, you can do end-to-end encryption in your AV system if that's what you want to do, or that you can add a level of accessibility if that's what is required in your kind of workplace and in those workspaces there as well. So hopefully it's about giving options. This is why I have a lot of hope for the AV industry, because it's not just the manufacturers who can offer that. It's also folks that are performing Sean's role as an advocate for their clients, right? Whoever they might be. It's the people doing straight up consulting or engineering services, people who are doing the installations, you know, all those roles that, you know, Sean was referencing earlier. I think they could all benefit from thinking about the ways that you can help customers, even with the very simplest things, find ways to use their technologies. And I think that's one of the great strengths of our industry, is that there's a lot of really smart people out in the world out there that really understand the nuances of being able to deploy technology. And they can really help customers who have those really niche needs kind of bring something back to their workspace that is going to be very effective for them. And I think that's an industry core value. And I hope we don't lose sight of that, because I believe it's something that doesn't exist in every other industry, but it certainly exists here.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one thing is we do act like a community here, yeah. You know, helping each other out. So, all right, guys, last story here comes to us from EdTech Magazine. Higher education sees a jump in cloud adoption, looking at not only the fall, but also how they get through the summer and how they take care of the next school, the next academic year. One of the things, and this is from the article, quote unquote, institutions along the journey went to cloud and had a much easier transition to remote learning, but even those colleges have expanded their usage in recent months. Sean, one of the things that the article points out is the differences between cloud and on-prem. And really quickly, on-prem means on-premise. That means that the physical server is in your facility. Those colleges, according to the article, they faced a longer wait time and had more difficulty transitioning to learn from home, college, you know, classes from home, than the folks who did cloud computing, meaning that I can, AV Nation uses Amazon S3 for the vast majority of our stuff, right? I can go on right now and in 5-10 minutes, I can have a server up and running. 20-30 minutes for me personally, because I don't know what I'm doing.
I was just going to have you check your math there for a second. It may have taken 30 minutes, but
it would probably take me an hour then. Yes. For Bradford, it would take 5 minutes. For you, exactly. Derek, 3 minutes, you know, for Sean too. But in general, right, you could pretty much within a couple of hours have, you know, a brand new server up and running. That's the benefits of cloud. The downside of cloud is you got to have a connection 24/7, right? So when you're consulting and talking with higher education here, where does it lie here? Like what is that line here where you go, okay, now you're living in the cloud. Now what you're talking about is this, you need to go cloud, or you're still okay with having stuff on premise?
I think it's not so cut and dry. You've got a lot of schools that have security issues. Yeah, remember, if you have a school where you're doing a lot of research, pharmaceutical, genetic, biotech, which a lot of these schools do, and we're not going to get into the whole thing about how, you know, NSA and DEA feed money into schools to, you know, recruit people to CIA and more of the alphabet soup. But if you have security issues, which a lot of colleges do, you have proprietary information, classified information, they can't necessarily put stuff on the cloud. They're not allowed to. So they have to be on-prem. It's just now for your general electives, sure. I mean, unless the history department has, you know, some access to some secret national treasure, you can go to cloud. You can transition part of your education to the cloud, especially for the things where most people need, your English courses, math courses, so on, for your general electives. Anything that's perhaps in the master's and graduate and doctorate where you have sensitive information that you need to keep on-prem for security purposes, that's where I would see the difference. Smaller schools, community colleges, which really, you know, service a lot of people, and they have high turnover. People come for a semester, a year, 6 years, 5 years. You know, they have that. They like the cloud. They're like, hey, anything I can do to save money and service this large swath of the population who come here, they're all for it. But your Harvards, your Northwesterns, these age-old schools, they were invested money. You know, they're not. People seem to forget that colleges aren't your kids' preschool or even high school. These are basically businesses with a lot of different divisions and bureaucracies and people trading money for projects and research and things. And therefore, as we all know from doing business with higher ed, it's never fun. The person who's writing your check may not be the person who's telling you what to do, who may not be the person you're actually reporting to on the
job
site.
They aren't the person. No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So it's very similar with healthcare. You know, you got to deal with the different hands, the nurses, the doctors, the admin, the sponsorship, whoever is actually writing the check and doing this, that, and the third. When you deal with higher ed, much like healthcare, I always approach it like this. Take a deep breath, drink a lot of coffee, hold your comments to the very end. Once everyone's, you know, wasted, taking the 1 hour meeting, and it's now a 3 hour meeting. You do the 3 hour meeting with the client. They let you sit there, and while they can combat each other and be, you know, my job, your job, this department, who's paying, this, that, and the third. And then you come to it and say, listen, guys, you've got some things you need to take care of. You want to accomplish this. We've got a very short window, which is always the case with education. You've got that 2 to 3 month window in the summer when they try to cram all their projects in. You got to coordinate with the other trades, whether it be general contractor, the electrician, their internal IT department, whoever it is. You get all that done. You set up a schedule, which you know will get modified, changed, and overextended 5 more times. And then you take another deep breath and you say, okay, here's how it's going to cost. They say, we don't want to pay it. And you say, well, if everyone does what they say they're going to do, it probably won't cost as much. But giving our years of experience, as we all sit there and say, I guarantee you it's going to cost as much because this, this, and this is going to go wrong and we'll be stuck. So let's just agree that it's going to cost this now. And if it doesn't, great. Get that money back. If it ends up going like 99% of education projects go, it's going to cost X and we'll be there anyway. On-prem works, like I said, for high security stuff. If you have that going on, if you're doing, I can't say names. I did a project for a big UC recently. And there were security concerns, which there always are with the UCs, because they all have a lot of research. All the University of California do a lot of research, a lot of bio research, especially. A lot of animal testing goes on for all those vegetarian, vegan, hippie lovers in Berkeley. And so they always got the security concerns and what you're building and, you know, where things are going. You know, they want to keep the, you know, the students who want to protest don't work in those buildings. So they got to have security to keep them out. So it's always door security and things to tie into AV and earthquake codes and doing all that. But then they always want to have, there's always something, either KVM because there's another building and this, that, and there's all the security. So they want on-prem. The UCs do a lot of on-prem. And they get a lot of help from the government of California for high-speed internet and everything. Anyone's been to UC Davis, for example, if you look at a topographical map of where UC Davis's campus is, and it's surrounded by farmland, you'll see all these little long tracts of business parks surrounding it in these linear fashions. That's where the fiber lines run that feed all the research. So when they put this fiber line in, they got this big waiver from the government to tear up all this farmland and wetland. All the businesses said, hey, if you're going to give them a waiver, we're going to build our business tracks on top of it so we can get the high-speed internet.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love the I love the fact that Sean has never been in a higher education meeting, because you can tell he has been in too many of them. So Derek, last question for you, or you'll wrap up this here. When we're talking about cloud and versus on-prem, and we look at the impact on the network, is there any negligible difference, or is it pretty much if you have the connectivity, whether it's fiber or whatever it is, then it really just comes down to personal preference or industry preference and security?
Yeah, I think security. I think it comes down to some preferences, but probably also comes down to the goals and strategy of the organization. I think I'm surprised at some of the industries that do embrace more of a cloud and services approach versus the other industries or segments of business or education, which really see the value in having things that are a little more on premise. And I think, I think it's sort of the great unsolved solution is deciding where to put that. I think, I don't know, in the history of computing, I think there's been great vacillations and oscillations between, hey, let's put everything at a workstation. Hey, let's make it something mobile. Hey, let's make something centralized. Hey, we got this mainframe over here. Right. And there's, and those things still exist. So I think there's, lots of AS400s out there doing accounting and crunching numbers.
Well, that's true. That's probably true.
Lots of things out there. At least I think the point is that, I think it can be hard, to find something that's at a platform level where you can solve for all use cases. I think our industry and its needs, in terms of what it should and shouldn't provide the customers has just grown to a point where, you need to have a number of different options, and they might be segmented by the type of technology that, someone is looking to use and deploy. And I think that's really, that becomes where the tough choices as a manufacturer, you have to make choices about those things a lot. And they're not short-term decisions. They're things that, take time to make sure that they're designed and implemented correctly. And there's a lot of ways to shortcut things, but when you're kind of keep the end user in mind what their goals may be, I think that's an important question to ask. What's your tolerance for having things on premise or off premise? If you've already bought into a model in some part of your organization, maybe there's kind of confidence because someone sees value there. But then again, maybe someone's had a positive experience going the other way, and instead of having something off-premise, on-premise is the preferred route. So I don't think there's any one magic answer for that. It would be nice if there was, but then it wouldn't be AV, right?
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys. And just for the record, one of my favorite G.I. Joes growing up was named Mainframe. So that I have a special place in my heart for Mainframe. He was a technology communications guy. Anyhow, look him up, kids.
Once again, showing your age and your value, Tim.
I am. My second favorite was Snake Eyes, but my first favorite was definitely Mainframe. All right. Thank you both so much for joining us. Mr. Sean Reed, thank you, sir.
Yes, shameless plug. Check out astronav.com, and please visit also iavschicago.com, a great and wonderful younger AV firm, minority business owned and veteran owned. Two wonderful gentlemen really doing a lot to change and address diversity within the AV IT industry, really challenging compliance in the AV and IT realm, which is an important thing. We need to see more of it. We need to make sure utilization is being happening and making sure that everyone's getting a fair playing field in this wonderful industry. It often gets called monochromatic, but it really isn't. I'm not the only black guy here, I hope, but sometimes it feels that way. But there are so many wonderful women, Asians, Hispanics, disabled veterans, every age group and religion in this wonderful industry, because really we're all just a bunch of geeks who couldn't get jobs elsewhere. So let's at least celebrate geek culture and be able to monetize it and know that geeks come in all shapes, colors, and fashions, and you know, do more. So check out Innovative AV Systems out of Chicago. And you know, shameless plug once again, Kreshmer Togekic, great engineer also, and someone please hire Ben Shimwell, wonderful man.
Yeah, absolutely. The two things. First of all, you get involved with the Diversity Council from AVIXA. Great folks doing some really great work. My buddy Charmaine. Yeah, doing some good work. The other part of that, though, is read Sean's piece on some stuff. You know, that was some good reporting. So
thank you.
All right, Mr. Jonkis, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate
absolutely.
It.
How do people get a hold of you or Extron?
Well, you can find me at Extron or you can find me on LinkedIn. I appreciate being involved here. And Sean, great to collaborate with you again.
Oh, wait, and I want to give a shout out to Extron for that new cable cubby drawer. That I've been waiting for someone to make one of those. I posted it on LinkedIn. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, I'll let those folks know.
It's not every day, just for the record, that Derek gets thanked for products that he makes. So,
well, I mean, it's a
form, it's not. I mean,
it's a piece of metal with a couple inserts, but it's functional and it does what it needs to do.
Exactly.
I'll let that team know. They'd be grateful for that feedback. I think they've already received your feedback, but I will make sure that they know. I heard about it again today. So,
usually they only hear from me when I'm complaining about one of your products. So at least for once, I'm telling them too. That I like them.
Hey, we don't want to hear all the good stuff. You only hear the good stuff. You don't make the hard decisions. So we like it when people are critical, and we appreciate it.
We can do a whole episode if you want on my complaints on GC Pro versus GC Configurator, and you know what we should do about that. But we won't go there.
I will let you two have a private conversation on that.
Let's do it.
I will actually have something to say because I've used both. But anyhow, my name is Tom Albright. I'm going to get in trouble by somebody, I'm certain. Don't follow me on the Twitters, but go by the website that Sean wrote for, avnation.tv. That's avnation.tv. You will find this program and a host of others. While you're there, please check out our supporter section. These are the folks who help us financially, help us bring you ITAV, AV Week, and Resi Week, and Extron is one of those, and we thank them for their support. So check out all that and more at avnation.tv. That's avnation.tv. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. And it's all the time we have for ITAV.